All right, before I get going with today's show, I want to welcome back a great sponsor, Casper Mattress. Welcome back, guys. If you all haven't heard of Casper, it's an online retailer of premium mattresses for just a fraction of the price. A Casper mattress provides resilience and long-lasting supportive comfort. That's because Casper's mattress is a one-of-a-kind. It's a new hybrid mattress that combines premium latex foam with memory foam. It has just the right sink and gives just the right bounce. Now, all of you who want a mattress, you guys are probably getting ready to spend about $2,000. But a Casper's mattress is between $500 for a twin, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king. You can't spend $1,000 if you want to. The reason is you cut out the middleman. You guys go online. You order this from Casper. It's free delivery, and they will return it within 100 days. In other words, you got to try this thing out for over 3 months, and if you don't like it, you send it back. It's risk-free. I have a Casper mattress. I sleep on one. I didn't return it, but I would have had 100 days to do it. Guys, it's that simple. Casper understands the importance of trying out a mattress and making sure that it really is your fit. You're going to spend a third of your life on it. I'm hoping you all are getting 8 hours a night. That's a third of your life. It's very important, the mattress you sleep on, and it's truly risk-free. Try it out for 100 days and send it back if you don't like it. They come pick it up. It's that easy. If you act right now, you can save another $50 off the purchase, but you got to visit my special offer on the Casper site. Go to casper.com, CASPER.com/CHAIL. Use that promo code, CHAIL, okay? No caps, CHAEL. Again, that's casper.com/CHAIL to get another $50 off now. Let's start the show.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on podcast1.com. And for that, you're welcome.
I'm Chael Sonnen, and you once again have made the outstanding choice of listening to MMA's hottest, biggest, and best podcast. You're welcome. Guys, I'm going to get right into it. I got Jake Shields. He is sitting on hold right now. And I want to get to him. I'm pretty hot about what happened to him over the weekend. Did you guys have a chance to see his fight? Let me set the stage real quick for anybody that might have missed it, and we'll get Jake on here. But he fought World Championship fight in the World Series of Fighting. That's the name of the promotion. They fought out there in Las Vegas. He took on Husamar Palhares. Husamar Palhares is a very dangerous guy. He's a very good fighter. He's a submission ace. When he gets a hold of a limb, he tries to tear it off. He's one of those guys that's very rough. That's within the rules. He can do all of that. The problem the guy's got is when his opponent taps out, he doesn't let go. And in the world of MMA, guys, we operate with very few rules. Very few rules. And I'm not a prude about a guy pushing a few of those. I'm really not. But there's no biting. There's no eye gouging. There's no punching the back of the head. There's not a whole lot of rules. And the ones that are there are extremely important. You cannot under any circumstance touch a guy's eye. I can't speak any clearer. You cannot touch a guy's eyeball. Nor should you want to. There should be no part of your character, no matter what a competitor you are, how down and dirty, how much you want to win, go through the list there. You should never even want to cost or cause a guy vision damages. He's only got two of them. He needs them forever. Doesn't matter. The end. I can't say it any clearer. And this goddamn Pelharis keeps digging in guy's eyes. And this isn't a Chuck Liddell or a John Jones situation where he throws punches with an open hand and repeatedly slips a finger into a guy's eye. This is totally different. He's on top of a guy on the ground, seeks out the eyeball, finds the eyeball, and then stays in it in a digging fashion. He gouged Jake Shields' eye 8 times. You can go back and watch the tape. He gouged it 8 times. This is irrehensible. In addition, the fight ended. Pelharis, who got beat up the whole time, he won about 10 seconds of the fight. Jake Shields whipped him pretty good. But he got a Kimura lock. A very, very nice Kimura lock. Jake Shields tapped out. Now, guys, Jake Shields doesn't tap out. Okay? So when Jake Shields says, hey, uncle, you got to stop the action right away. You just do. Pelharis not only didn't stop, referee steps in. Steve Mazzagatti puts 2 hands on Pelharis. Not 1 hand. This is relevant. He puts 2 hands on him and is telling him to stop. Pelharis then, not only does he not stop, he actually manipulates the arm into a worse position by about 3 to 4 inches. He moves Jake's arm, which is already vulnerable enough that he tapped, moves it another 3 to 4 inches. They have suspended him. They've stripped his title, but he's going to have to deal with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And the big problem with Pelharis is he's a nice guy. When you deal with him, he's a nice, pleasant guy. But he's hurting people. And guys, there's a difference. There's a difference in trying to create damage within the rules. Get your hand raised. It's a competitive sport. We all agree to the rules. We know what they are going in. And injuring somebody after he taps out. After a guy taps out, acknowledges defeat, you then try to send him home with an injury? I can't believe this is happening because it's the sixth time. It's the sixth time the son of a bitch has pulled something like this. And people are always quick, and I'm one of them too. I've done this too, but I'm not doing it anymore. We're always quick to point out the backstory of Pelharis, the poverty that he went to, the sacrifices he made, the success story that he now is. He used to have to hide in a farmer's field until the farmer would feed the pig slop. And then Pelharis would sneak out and he had to eat the slop. This is how he lived. And we all always feel a certain amount of compassion because of how the guy came up. But guys, it's time number 6. He tried to break a guy's arm after the referee touched him with 2 hands. 2 hands is relevant. There's no way to say, well, I didn't know you were there. Referee's voice is yelling, opponent tapped. 2 hands go on him, and he moves the arm another 3.5 to 4 inches. In addition, he's a grown man. I am really sorry those things happened to him as a kid. I really am. I am really sorry he ate pig slop. And I acknowledge that he's a success story and done a good job. But I cannot continue to feel bad for him. I cannot respect him and pity him at the same time. This is inexcusable that this has happened. Well, this is now time number 7. It had happened 6 times before this. This is now time number 7. My teammate and good friend Mike Pierce was his last victim in the UFC. Pelharis was released. Quick history lesson. Pelharis was released from the UFC coming off of a win. He won the fight with Mike Pierce. Mike Pierce tapped to a heel hook, which Pelharis did not let go, and then he tore up Mike's leg. So as bad as I feel for Pelharis, that his ability to earn a living is going to be impaired for a while, as bad as I feel about that, and I do, what about my buddy Mike Pierce, who operated within the rules, didn't come in juiced out of his mind, didn't hold a submission after the fact, and then he hasn't been able to work for 15 months? What about Jake Shields? Just because Jake Shields didn't suffer an injury due to this arm lock, didn't lose sight of his eye, it doesn't change the fact that the intent was there. And I'm mad about it. And I'm mad because I don't have a solution. I don't think it's over for Pelharis. I realize his organization has now stripped him of his title and suspended him, but I suspect he's going to be front and center in front of the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And Commissioner Pat Lundvall specifically, mark my words, she will not find this amusing. None of them will. But Commissioner Lundvall specifically, I assure you, will review this case. Now, enough of that. Let's take a quick second and get Jake Shields in here, get his opinion. Stick around.
On this week's Big Podcast, Shaq got to weigh in on Tom Brady's suspension and his mysteriously destroyed cell phone.
When he gets a new phone, he has to destroy the old one. Get rid of it. Really?
He's married to a beautiful, gorgeous young supermodel, right? So what if she sends him pictures that she only wants him to see?
I would imagine that sex is a distraction.
I didn't say it was sex. I just said
what are they going to do? Play board games? Come on, Shaq. We're going to play the game of life, and I'm going to spin your wheel.
No.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable.
The Big Podcast with Shaq.
That's me. It's up right now at podcastone.com.
That's podcastone.com.
You like making great money, right? Well, here's a really cool opportunity I wanted to share with you. Driving with Uber. It's America's most popular smartphone app that connects riders and drivers. I take Uber a bunch. I love them. And in chatting with the different drivers, some of them have really interesting stories as to why they drive with Uber. They love being their own boss. They earn great money. It's easy to start. You just need a car and a license. Driving with Uber is great for anyone who needs and enjoys flexibility. Now's the prime time to cash in by driving with Uber. You'll thank me for telling you every week when you get paid. I could be getting into your car with you if you drive with Uber. You've got a car and you've got a license, so put them both to work and start earning serious life-changing money today. Visit drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com. Drivewithuber.com.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, we are back to Your Welcome, joined by Jake Shields. Jake, what's going on, man?
Oh, not too much, man. Just hanging out, you know, just had a little coffee, relaxing.
Well, let's get right into it. What in the hell, what happened on Saturday? What is the deal with Pale Horace?
Yeah, man, it was insane. It was, I think, like, once he gouged me in the eyes the first round, but it wasn't too bad. And then the second round, he just started taking his thumbs and just, like, digging in my eyes. Like, you can kind of see it in the video, but he's taking his thumbs and trying to, like, fully, like, just gouge my eyes out. And then, I mean, I started telling Mazzagatti, and he ignores it, and Paul Harris just keeps doing it over and over again. I mean, it was just absolutely ridiculous. I couldn't believe, for one, I couldn't believe he was doing it, and two, I couldn't believe the ref wasn't doing anything.
Well, that's got to be very scary. We have very limited rules when we're in there, which is why it's so important that they're observed. I'm not a prude when it comes to understanding the fact that we're in a cage fight and it gets a little dirty, but with our very limited set of rules, you don't touch a guy's eyeballs.
Exactly. Like, biting and eye gouging, those are just two things. Like, I'm not a guy that bitches either, you know? If someone grabs a cage, yeah, I don't like it, or, you know, occasionally there's a low blow, I mean, there's things that happen, you know, I mean, back of the head shots. I don't bitch about that kind of stuff. But gouging eyes, that's things is completely, completely ridiculous.
Okay, so I don't know if you've seen this. I've been in this studio about 7 or 8 minutes until you called in prepping, and my phone just went off, and Pal Harris has been stripped of his championship and suspended indefinitely. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, I just found that out a little bit ago, so I guess they just stripped him, mentioning clearly the right thing.
Clearly the right thing, but here, there's some moving parts. I mean, let's just have a discussion on this. Why is the World Series stripping him as opposed to the Athletic Commission? It's very rare. Why is the organization having to do this? How did the Athletic Commission miss it?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not really sure about them. And apparently they're reviewing suspending me for punching him afterwards. It's like, that's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, should I punch the guy? Of course not. But my eyes were almost gouged out. I was a little frustrated. The ref wasn't doing anything.
Now, so, see...
it'll be ridiculous if I get suspended.
I don't think that's going to go anywhere. And I hear you, and they do have to review that the bell did go off and you threw the punch. But I will tell
thing. I am aware that was illegal, and of course I should have done it, but I was just so frustrated. It's ridiculous, like how blatantly he cheated.
I couldn't believe it when I was sitting there watching it. I mean, to keep that lock repeatedly. I mean, that's the thing with fighting him is he keeps those locks. I was kind of glad he had your arm and not your leg.
Exactly. I got this true. Yeah, but my knee probably has some serious damage. I mean, my shoulder and elbow are sore, but I don't think anything serious.
Yeah, I watched it, Jake. To paint you a picture, so I watched this. I was out at ESPN because the UFC was going on. We were covering that as well. So where we go to watch the fights, we have these three huge screens in front of us. There's a boxing match going on, UFC going on, and your fight going on. And, I mean, we replayed it over and over. After you tapped, after the referee steps in, because, see, we all give him a little bit of room until the ref steps in.
Yeah.
Even though that's not the honor and the spirit of the tap, that's how the rules work. The ref steps in. By the time the ref touches him with both hands, he moves your arm another 3 to 4 inches. Now, this is after it's already reached the point of submission, and Jake Shields doesn't tap for people that haven't followed your career. So when Jake Shields taps, that means, man, you got to stop. He moved it another 3 inches.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, he's just obviously serious, trying to hurt people. I mean, and then, yeah, who's going to gouge the eyes? That's something I can lose a vision after that. I mean, to me, obviously the arm's serious, but the eye is even more serious to me.
Well, way more. Way more. There's nothing. I just don't understand. I don't understand. And we've been giving this guy a pass for so long.
Yeah. He's been in trouble. It just makes no sense. I mean, clearly this guy just has. He's not going to learn. He's kicked off the UFC. He's not going to keep doing stuff like this. And apparently doesn't get it. He's either too dumb or just too crazy or whatever it is. He has no business fighting.
So let's go back to the Athletic Commission. So you have heard through the grapevine, or they actually contact you, say, Jake,
no,
we're going to do a review?
I just heard they're reviewing it, so that may be in some kind of trouble.
All right. They have a history of being very reasonable. And you did throw a punch too late. That's true. But they do have a history of being reasonable. I'm venturing a guess.
I've never dealt with them, so you know more than me. So I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's really minor if I do.
And even when I've been on the wrong side of them, Jake, I'm still an objective person and able to go, yeah, you're right. I'm wrong here. You're right. But they were they were still fair. And so, you know,
that's good because I've never really sat down and talked to them, so I really have no idea what kind of people I'm dealing with.
They're reasonable. They're not just going to look at the media. They're going to say, listen, the guy did this and this, and yeah, Jake punched him late, but I don't know. I guess I shouldn't speak for him, but he's the one that should be in the hot seat here, not you.
I punch him, but I feel like there's occasionally where you get where you deserve a free pass.
Yeah, well, there comes a point where it's starting near a reaction, where you're going, you know, my, that's what it looked like with you, almost like it was a reaction, but I don't understand this, and we have forgiven this guy so long. Because, you know, you hear the stories of his past and he had a really rough youth and blah, blah, blah. But, man, he's an adult now. He's an adult, and we can't continue to feel sorry for him for anything. He's an adult in an adult sport, not operating under agreed-upon rules, let alone the rules that aren't written that we just as fighters all adhere to.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly doesn't follow the ethical rules, but he doesn't follow the written rules either. And it's I'm all for giving people, second chances, third chances, but there becomes a point where it's just too much and ridiculous.
So go back to I believe Mazzagatti was the ref. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Okay, at one point, he did break the action, and he was saying something. We couldn't tell what it was. After the fact, we found out that there was some kind of an eye gouging, and so he broke and gave a warning. Is that because you told him, or did he actually see it?
I think he saw it, but I told him about 5 times before that. He kept doing it over and over, and Mazzagatti just wasn't listening. I kept saying, he's doing it again, and finally he dug it again, and he stops it and goes, "You do it again, I'm going to take a point." And then as soon as I went back to it, you know, I went back to mount. I was trying to get an arm triangle on him, and he went just right back to digging his fingers in my eye again. And Mazzagatti just ignored it. And he even goes back to, "I warned you, don't do it again." And then he just keeps doing it. Mazzagatti just keeps warning him and not taking points away.
Oh, that's outrageous!
It should be a first time, you know, point. Second time disqualification. It's such a serious matter that it's not something you should get warnings for.
Yeah, and I don't even know about the warning. Not if it's intentional. An intentional eye gouge should be automatic disqualification.
I felt him digging my thumbs in and trying to dig the eyes out. It was I've never seen anything like it. You know, all the years grappling, all the years fighting. Never felt anyone dig my eyes. I dig my eyes out like that.
All right,
kind of flipping in there. They were like he was trying to dig him in as hard as he could.
Yeah, and I think for an unintentional eye poke, it should still be a point. Yeah. Second time, yeah. Unintentional fights over.
Maybe warning for unintentional. You know, those get a little tricky, but if it's intentional, that's 100% should not be tolerated.
Okay, so not only did all hell break loose in your fight, but then it surfaces your teammates, Nick and Nate Diaz. Alleged, I actually watched the video, and I couldn't see where Nick or Nate Diaz was in the video, but a video surfaces that they got into a fight with the Russian guys, predominantly Khabib Nurmagomedov. I watched the video a couple of times. I couldn't see that happening. What do you know about that?
I only know what I heard from people. I don't know exactly what happened. I just think, you know, him and Nate and Khabib had some beef, so I think somehow they got into it, and I guess supposedly Nate slapped him or something. I didn't see it, just what I heard.
That's going to happen. Sure.
I was actually in a cage. A big brawl was going on. But, you know, I walked in there, and I'm like, I'm not going to look at the brawl because I want to focus ready for my fight. And I had no idea it was Nate and him fighting.
Oh, this is before your match.
It was during the fight, and I guess it was before the fight, and then again, I guess it fought outside after the fight.
Oh, no.
So supposedly there was two fights.
No, there was. There was two videos, and in the first video, and again, I watched it a bunch of times, but it's just a guy's cell phone video. You imagine how good that is, particularly when there's a melee going on. And I did see Nate in it, though I didn't see him do anything, and he wasn't near Khabib. In the second one, I never once saw Khabib. I didn't see Nick or Nate, but it was still titled. The headline of the post was, you know, Diaz is getting a second brawl with Khabib, and I'm going, well, I've watched that five times. I don't know where they were.
I think the second one might have been more than friends. I think it might have been a bunch of those, like, Russian and Dagestani guys fighting some of Nick and Nate's friends.
Okay.
But, you know, if they're friends, everyone will just automatically claim it's them.
That's the way that works. So
they get the rep.
What is Ray Sefo's stance on this? Ray Sefo's the president of World Series. Is he a president like Dana White is, where he's actually got the authority, or is that more of a... hey, we respect you, Ray, and we want you in this position. I mean, does Ray come in the back and make a decision, and that's it?
Honestly, I'm not really sure, Zach. I think it's a team there. I think several people making decisions. I don't think it's like, like Dana clearly makes all the decisions. Well, him and Lorenzo, but I think World Series fighting, to me, it seems like more of a team effort.
Okay. So whose call was it to actually strip Sefo? I apologize, Pale Horus. As I understand it, Sefo's the one. He went on the MMA Hour earlier today and made that announcement.
I would say the combination of him and Ollie, they seem to be the ones that are making the decisions.
Okay, so Pale Horus,
so
then...
the maker, but I think he has a lot to do with the decisions as well.
All right, and so Pale Horus then, he's stripped of the title and he's suspended. Is that kind of like what happened with John Jones, in that he's not released then? He's not free to fight somewhere else?
Exactly. Okay. They're spinning him but holding the contract.
All right. And that's a little weird, okay, too. What in the hell does that mean? Because they did it indefinitely. If you suspend a guy and you set a time, it's different, but you can't just hold him up. There's got to be some kind of process.
Kind of weird. I agree. I don't really know how that works. But at this point, there's probably nowhere he really can go fight, except maybe Japan. I don't think anywhere else to really sign him right now.
It's tough. I mean, you darn near have to unionize against a guy where just the fellow guys in the division just go, hey, guys, look, let's not fight this guy. We got to drag him out, or we have to do something.
Like I said, I'm one for giving people chances. This guy is just, you know, after trying to gouge my eyes out, it's hard for me to feel too sorry for him.
Well, his coach, the guy that started his career, is Murillo Bustamante.
He's a great guy.
Great guy, but Bustamante came out in a report and said, you know, I had to kick him out of the gym. He's not with our gym anymore because Bustamante said in an interview that he was doing this in the gym. Like, the students come in and they go to work out with him, and his, you know, his go-to move is that heel hook, and that he was falling back into heel hooks and then not letting students go. And Bustamante's saying, you know, listen, first off, I don't want to see someone get hurt, but secondly, from a business standpoint, I now don't have students. They're gone. They're out of the sport.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, blowing guys' knees out in training even.
But what's the matter with them? How does that happen? Jake, how does this happen? I've never encountered it in my life firsthand. I've dealt with some pricks in practice before, but not a guy where you didn't just go, hey, look, you can't do that. But they did it again and again and again. Never.
Yeah, it makes no sense because he's so talented. I mean, one of the most talented guys out there. You know what? I think he won Abu Dhabi. He's just a jiu-jitsu freak, but he's clearly mentally... I don't know if he's a bad guy or he's really not smart enough or something's not wired right in the guy's head. But whatever it is, he has no business fighting.
Yeah.
Or apparently training if he's hurting people.
Yeah.
No one allow him in my gym.
Yeah, it's so tough because the people that do know him They all say the same thing. They all say what you and I are talking about, that he hurts guys, he holds things too long, you can't trust him, he's a terrible training partner because you can't trust. But then they'll also go, but you know what? He's a really nice guy. And I've dealt with him too. And every time I've been around him, I've thought, oh, you're a pretty nice guy. But it doesn't change the fact. It's like, look, say you're the UFC. Okay, which is who he was with a couple of years ago. The UFC's only commodity is the fighter. So when Pelharis goes in there and he puts, in this case, Mike Pierce out for a year with a hurt knee, when he goes in and does that, he's now taking the UFC's only commodity and taking it away from a business standpoint. Forget ethics and rules. From a business standpoint, you can't have a guy like that around. So I don't know why these promotions keep signing him.
Yeah, I know. It really makes no sense. And it feels like this is probably the last straw. I don't know. I don't know if anyone really ever let him fight again after this. It's hard to say.
It's really hard to say, or where he would. And, you know, not for nothing, but I'm a guy that's tried every substance in the world on the off chance something that would work. I can look at a guy. I don't need a drug test. I'll tell you who's using. I'll tell you what they're using. That guy was as dirty as he's ever been when he got in the ring. I don't know how he made 170. He wasn't even trying to cover it up.
Yeah, I know the guy. Yeah, he was obviously just jacked out of his mind. There's no doubt about that.
No, all right. So, I mean, I guess that's the speculation. So now the question comes, what's next for you? I read Ali had put something out. Ali had put something out after the fight saying, look, I didn't get to see it that close, but I am going to go into the office. The first thing I'm going to do when I get there is rewatch this. And if he gouged Jake's eyes, I'm getting rid of him. And he did. And then Ali went on to say, so he went on a step further and said, and what we'll do is we'll put Fitch and Okami are already going to fight, but he said, I'm going to have Jake fight the winner of them for the belt. So I guess that's your next match, the winner of Fitch Okami.
I guess so. I mean, I'm at a point, you know, after a fight, sometimes you don't feel like thinking about your next fight. I just feel like taking a couple weeks off before I start thinking about my next fight, but it sounds like that's probably what it's going to be.
And when do those guys get matched up?
I just heard about it, like, the day at the weigh-ins for my fight, for the press conference, so I don't really know how long they've known, but... Yeah, I just found out a few days ago.
Okay, but they don't have a date set? I mean, are they...
I think they do. I think it was like October or something.
Okay, that's a tough match.
I know it's not in October. No, yeah, that's a good match. Those guys are both really talented. I mean, he's going to be a huge 7-pounder. We'll see how he does with that weight. But, I mean, he's a talented, tall, rangy southpaw. And Fitch is, you know, he's tough. Everyone knows Fitch is always game.
Yeah, you wrestled Fitch. I caught that on YouTube. You fought Okami. I saw that about 20 times. When I was getting ready to fight with Okami, what do you think there? If you just had to lean, who do you think's gonna?
Man, that's actually a really, really tough matchup. I mean, I think with the weight drop, maybe Fitch, just because Okami's gonna be a little smaller. I think if Okami was at 85, I think Okami would be a little strong for him. But I think when he drops down, he might lose some of the strength.
How does Okami plan to make 170?
You know, Okami, you fought him. He's just a difficult guy.
Yeah, and I don't know how he makes 170. He's huge.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's gonna be tricky because he's a big. He's not a small 85-pounder, so that's the thing. How he's going to still make the weight?
Did you have a chance to watch the UFC when your fight was done? Was there a chance for you to get to a television and take in Ronda's fight with Betch?
Yeah, I watched. I saw her fight online somewhere. It was so short. It was like someone's Facebook or something. So I didn't watch the rest of the card, but I saw that. Once again, Ronda just came out completely dominant. That girl's she's a different level than all the other girls fighting.
Yeah, she is. And here's the question that I kept getting asked when that fight was done. And I don't really know why this was the question, but apparently this is what people want to know. Is that bad for business? If Ronda continues to whip people in a matter of seconds, will that drive down ticket sales and pay-per-views? It's pure speculation, but, I mean, what do you think? Is this going to be good for Ronda or bad?
I think it's that's a tricky question, but I think overall it's good. I mean, her name is everywhere. I think she keeps hitting the dominant when people curious. I mean, are you going to want to buy a front row ticket? Expensive? Probably not, but people will still tune in. It still gets your name out there. It's still a ton of press for the UFC. Obviously, for her, it's great when she wins those fast fights. But they do need, you know, someone like a big fight for her would help. Like her versus Cyborg is a fight that'll sell. So if they want to do the really big numbers, they do need to build an opponent for her.
Yeah, and you know that's a tough one too. I mean, to make believe that Cyborg could make 135 pounds is a stretch. You know, she came out herself and said, I guess it was her manager at the time. Tito Ortiz had a cup of coffee in the management business, but one of the things he did before he left is he went out and made a statement, Chris Cyborg will die if she makes 135 pounds. Well, guess what? Now, if you're a promoter, you cannot sign her to a 135-pound fight. You can't do it because her manager just said she'd die.
It's also hard to take Tito Ortiz too seriously. That's the positive of that.
I guess it is, but, you know, if you're in Lorenzo and Dana's shoes, it's like, hey, girl, you got to make 135 somewhere. We'll happily bring you over, but you're going to have to make 135, and she's yet to do it. I mean, time just keeps ticking. She's not getting any better, Jake. She's not getting any younger.
The sooner she does the fight, the better for her. And all of a sudden, she loses, something happens, there's no money in that fight anymore.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, so you talk about Ronda, and there is a misunderstanding. Ronda is the biggest star in the UFC. She's not the biggest draw. And the media often gets that confused. And
yeah, no, I fully agree with you. I try to explain to people. Yeah, she's maybe the most famous, but I don't think she's selling. I could be wrong, but I don't think she's selling the most pay-per-views.
No, she's not. She's not. In fact, there's a gap. There's a few people in front of her, but she is the most likely to end up on Jimmy Kimmel later tonight. She is
exactly
the only one doing A-level movies. Yeah.
That.
So she needs an opponent. So we've got Miesha Tate. Miesha Tate is definitely the number one contender. She's been on fire. Now, Miesha's claim to this fight and the rollout that you'll see is this is the one girl that's taken Ronda the farthest. Ronda's hardest opponent. Now, if you look a little closer, Miesha got her ass kicked. It was not a competitive fight. She just had the pleasure of getting her ass kicked for 12 minutes instead of 35 seconds. So, I mean, that's a tough sell. And Ronda's already trying to use the swerve. She's already talking about, well, Misha's so tough and the element of surprise is gone and all these things. And for me, that's not refreshing. It's like, Ronda, you need to come out and call it what I'm calling it. Okay, you kicked her ass twice. You used the same move both times. And in the third fight, you'll submit her yet again with the exact same move. Just start being Babe Ruth. Start pointing to the stands and telling us where you're going to put the ball. But do not, under any circumstance, try to lie to me as a consumer. That's going to make me mad. And I'm already mad because it's already started.
I have to agree. And I like Miesha. I think she's tough. But again, it's hard to be that excited for this fight. I see the same thing happening. Of course, anything can happen in this world. Odds are Ronda's going to go out there, you know, beat her up, take her down, and end up armbaring her.
Yeah, I think so, too. And you know, God bless Miesha for being willing to try. It's certainly not a knock on her, but the reality is we've seen it. We saw it again. Neither one was close or competitive, but I think that it'll sell all right. And they're talking about doing that card in Dallas, in Cowboy Stadium, putting McGregor and Aldo on top of the bill.
That's a fight I really want to see. I mean, Aldo McGregor, that's exciting.
I like it too. Did you know Conor was as good as he is, or did he turn your head when he beat Mendez?
He turned when he beat Mendez. I thought he was going to lose. I'm not going to lie. I thought the guy was good, but I thought it was full of hype. But when he went and beat Mendez, I'm like, hey, I got to give this guy some credit.
Mm-hmm.
That was a legit fight. I mean, yeah, Mendez had a short training camp and looks a little tired, but regardless, Mendez is a stud, and he mentally beat him.
They did. He mentally beat. Yeah, and see, a lot of people don't know. Us fighters know that because, unfortunately, we've been there, so we're able to recognize that. But that is what happened. Yeah, Mendez is always ready to fight. Could have been in better shape. Yeah, sure, but Conor was going to win. I didn't know Conor was that good. I really did not buy into his skills.
I didn't either. He got my respect for that fight. Now it makes me that much more excited for Aldo versus McGregor.
Yeah, it's exciting, though. You know, they're booking it. They're talking about going to Dallas. And I can't help but wonder if the UFC has almost been pressured into this Dallas thing. The media loves to talk about two arenas, Dallas Cowboys Stadium and Madison Square Garden. And I'm sitting back as a consumer going, what's the difference? I'm going to sit down in my living room and push the buy button. Why go to the pain in the ass of going to Dallas? And I don't agree that the whole world's going to fly into Dallas. If you've been to Dallas, you're not going back.
Yeah, I'm not flying into Dallas.
Right.
No, it's not like you're flying into Vegas or New York where you're like, oh, yeah, I make a weekend out of it. I'm not going to make a weekend out of Dallas. I'll sit at home and watch it.
Yeah,
but no, we've also been to so many fights, I guess, where it takes a lot for us to want to go to a fight live when we could watch it at home.
Yeah, I totally agree. But the mystique of this venue by the media, I feel like they're starting to overwhelm and impede the UFC's decision-making process. I mean, it's a big stadium, all of that, but you know, it's not you and George in Toronto. It's not even close. Dallas. It's Dallas.
Yeah. It's like a bragging right type of thing.
Right.
I guess it's like, you know, can they sell it out or can they get it close? And yeah, the thing with me and George had advanced. It was Toronto. They just love MMA, and it was the first one there. And then, you know, George being a superstar, the car, so that's it. They're able to sell that out. But selling something out in Dallas, it's hard to say. It's a big thing to do.
I don't think we ever see George in the octagon again. I think that when he left, he's told the truth. He's still in practice, but the guy's just a fanatic exerciseaholic. I don't think that has anything to do with a comeback. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's a tough call. I hear he's still a complete stud in practice, still handling people, and I hear he looks amazing in practice, but you're probably right. I think he stepped away. I think he's enjoying life. I think he has plenty of money, so it's harder for him to have that hunger to go out there and fight.
Yeah, I agree. And it's hard for me to think that he would have a problem with Robbie Lawler. I have so much respect for Lawler, but
I think he'd be champ still. I think he's from what I hear, he's just as sharp in training, and I still think he's the best 70-pounder out there.
Yeah, and particularly with that matchup, I think with Hendricks, maybe he had some problems. You know, he's the master grappler, taking on a master grappler. But I don't know, with Lawler, I just think that really suits him.
I think it's a bad matchup, yeah. I think he's in and out so fast. Lawler's more slow power puncher. Not slow, but only as fast as George. I think he can get in and out, land the strikes, get the takedown, and ground and pound him.
Why is Robbie so much better now, in your opinion? Why is he, you know, even when you fought him, he was sharp and tough and all of that, but I mean, my God, he would kick his own ass.
He's looking amazing now. I think he's... you know, maybe being an AK, the American top team, just having a good team behind him. And it's hard to say exactly what it is. He's probably just more dedicated. I think before, you know, he was training out in the Midwest somewhere and didn't have the same kind of focus.
And what do you make of these Fedor rumors? Is Fedor going to come back to, well, I know he's coming back to MMA. He's already said that. Are we going to see him in the octagon, or do you think he'll end up over there with Coker?
He'll probably end up with Coker, be my guess. I like Fedor, but I think he's also past his prime, and it's hard for him to want to go into the UFC. I mean, what are they going to do, put him against... you know, like with Doom or Kane. I think he's got trouble against the top heavyweights nowadays.
Yeah, and then the other question is, would he come in at heavyweight or would he come in at 205? You know, a good way to revamp a guy's career. In fact, one of the best ways to revamp, put a fresh coat of paint on a guy is to just change weight classes. You put him in a different division, and psychologically that changes everything with the fans. He starts over at undefeated, and he goes from there.
And there's some exciting matchups. I mean, who wouldn't want to watch, like, Fedor versus Jon Jones?
Sure.
Or Rampage, or I guess there's a lot of exciting fights you could do at 205.
Oh, wow. You might have just hit it right there. That fight makes sense. Fedor versus Rampage. That might be the fight.
That would be perfect. Because Jones would probably be a little too much for a first fight back, and you got Rampage. They're both in pride. That would that'd be a good fight.
Yeah, and Jones would be a hard sell.
I would sit and watch it.
Yeah, Jones would be a hard sell. Like us hardcore guys, we would watch it. But to make believe that he would have a shot with Jones, that's a pretty big stretch. But you take a guy like Rampage, they were both in pride together. You know, Rampage doesn't quite seem as motivated as he used to be, though he's ever been as tough as he used to. That's the fight. Jake, that's the fight right there.
Yeah, I see the UFC matchmaker.
You should. And they could even catch weight it if they wanted to. If Fedor said, well, you know, I don't know if I want to go to 205. They could
Rampage
do a 215.
And 215, yeah.
Rampage loves 215. He doesn't like making 205 either. That's the fight. That is the fight right there. I just got excited for my first Fedor fight.
Yep. Fedor versus Rampage. Make it happen.
So... you will sit and you will wait then until Fitch and Okami is done. Is that fine with you? Because if you wait, that's 2 months, probably another 3 or 4 months. You could be out of the ring for half a year, but I guess when you're the top contender,
I'm okay with that. You know, I've been fighting for a long time. I don't mind breaks every now and then. You know how it is. When you're young, you want to fight 3, 4, or 5 times a year. But you're a little older, I'm fine fighting a little bit less.
And with the World Series of Fighting, in terms of sponsorship, you know, so much has been made of Reebok. In terms of sponsorship with your guys' view, now you guys are on NBC Sports, that's correct?
Yeah.
With NBC Sports, I mean, I would imagine that's a pretty big audience. How is sponsorship opportunity? Are guys getting behind that?
It's pretty good. I mean, better than I'd be doing with UFC.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, when I was in the UFC, I got a fight on Big Fox. Also had done fights over on FS1 and then on pay-per-view. And Big Fox, we had the most viewers. FS1, we had the second most viewers. And pay-per-view was actually the most limited viewership, which was pretty simple laws of supply and demand right there. And sponsorships were smallest for... they didn't care. Sponsors did not care. They would only really shell out the money if it was pay-per-view. And we tried explaining to them, but guys, less people are going to see. Right. Why is that? What's going on there?
The same thing. They'd always want to pay way more for the pay-per-view and way less for the free TV. I never understood that, but I've had the exact same thing happen. I don't understand the sponsor logic, but they want the pay-per-views.
Yeah. So what?
Maybe it's, like, more, maybe it's more prestigious pay-per-view shows. I don't know.
How was the live at tennis for your fight with Pal Harris? The way that they did their camera angles, they made it look like it had an excellent crowd, but they never did a live pan shot, so I couldn't tell. How was it?
The whole place looked full. I don't really know what it held. I think around 5,000, but it looked like it was full.
Oh, wow. So, what venue did they play? Was that the Palms?
The Planet Hollywood.
Planet Hall. I knew that, actually. That's what I meant to say. All right. Yeah, I've been to one of their shows there.
Yeah, it's a good side. It looked like it was a pretty packed crowd.
Yeah, I like the way they do it too. I'm impressed with their product, and I'm glad that they're still sustaining. Man, MMA it's a hard gig to make a dollar in.
Yeah, no, it is, and it seems like they're getting more organized. I mean, they have their next two shows. The lineup's already announced, because before they were announcing them so last minute, it seemed a little disorganized. But it seems like they're actually pulling it together a little bit better, which is good. You know, I really hope they stick around and last.
Yeah, I hope they do too. I've only heard good things. But we never know. You know, when you're a close company like that, you never know. And then NBC
exactly.
Sports, boy, that sounds great, but I don't know how big that sponsorship was either. You know, the UFC put the reality show, The Ultimate Fighter, on Spike, and we all thought, wow, this is a breakthrough moment. And then it took a couple of years before Dana came out and goes, you know what, they actually didn't pay us a dime. We had to pay them. I don't think that's Ray Sefo's spot. I think he's getting a little bit of money, but those TV contracts... You never know, you know. As you know, everybody thinks you're rich. I'm sure because you're on television. So
they automatically assume exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you know how that works.
Reality of it, yeah. Tough business, make money sometimes.
Now, what gym are you training at now? Or do you train at Gill's gym, or do you have your own thing going?
Yeah, mostly at Gill's. Training at Gill's a little bit. There's another one in Power in San Francisco. I train at. You know, go out with Nick and Nate. So just all around the Bay Area.
All right, good. How is Gill's gym? Beautiful place. I've only seen pictures.
Yeah, I know. His gym's really nice. It's really big, and he opened. It's packed all the time. I don't know how many members he has, but I'm sure he's doing well. The place is super busy.
Now, when we were training together for your fight with George, that was at the Fairtex gym. Is that place closed?
Yeah, that place closed.
Darn it.
Yeah, the guy that's running that was kind of running under the ground. But we're doing good for Gill. He opened his gym, literally, right when that one was closing, just by accident. He opened it, when that one was closing, and he took the head kick box. Members in there switched to Gill's.
All right, well, that is good for you. That was such a beautiful facility, and it was in such a metropolitan area. I knew the rent was not cheap, so I feared that they wouldn't be around, but I had my fingers crossed for them.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a nice gym, but unfortunately, the guy, you know, it didn't keep going. But like I said, Gill's gym's almost as nice as that one. It's pretty much the same size and built very similar, so it didn't really affect us. It was better for us. We just, you know, ended up having to work out at Gill's gym instead.
Yeah, cool. All right, Jake. Well, I got nothing else for you unless you got anything you want to add.
No, that's all, man. Just thanks for the support. And be talking to you, Joe.
Yeah, you're awesome. I'm glad you're all right from Saturday, man. I really am glad. Your eyes and arm, I mean, what a battle. And I am very confident that you will not have pushback from the commission. But if you do, I will be sure to update all the listeners here. And we're behind you.
Yeah, I certainly hope I won't. And it was, good talking to you.
Cool. Great talking to you. See you, Jake.
All right.
Oh, you know what, Jake? Before you go, I do have something to tell you. If you haven't checked out the Daily Fantasy MMA at DraftKings.com, I don't know what you're waiting for. DraftKings is the exclusive daily fantasy sports partner of the UFC, and this weekend, you can win big cash prizes. It's easy. Just pick your fighters. Pile up the points. Then go pick up your cash. That's it. You score points for significant strikes, advances, takedowns, Jake, which I know you know a lot about, knockdowns, and more. Look, you already know all the fighters. You watch all the matches. You're on the world's biggest MMA podcast right now. So put your knowledge to the test, and you could be part of the $1 billion that are going to be given away this year by DraftKings. Hurry to DraftKings.com right now. Use the promo code CHAIL and play for free this weekend. First place takes home 20 grand. You guys can play for free and win 20 grand. Then you'll really be thanking me, won't you? Finish in the top 10, you will qualify to win the Reebok prize package. That will include two tickets to a UFC, hotel, airfare, tons of Reebok gear. Enter right now at DraftKings.com. Use my name in the promo section, CHAIL. DraftKings.com, that's DraftKings.com. When I come back, I'm going to be joined by Rose Bowl champion, the captain of the football team when I was at the University of Oregon. All around good guy, good friend, pro wrestler, sports personality. I could go on and on. Josh Wilcox will be live in studio. Stick around.
Are you tired of being the guy
or girl
who's always the last one to find cool sports stuff out?
I'm tired of being the guy
or girl
who's always the last.
Okay.
Hey.
They get it. Here's what you have to do. Listen to The Dan Patrick Show and The Rich Eisen Show every day at podcast1.com. See, you'll hear Dan and Rich give you the inside scoop on everything sports. And they'll also go toe-to-toe with the biggest names in the NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, and any other three-letter acronym you can put together that means sports. Which is good news for you, because you can now become the office source thanks to Dan Patrick and Rich Eisen.
Thank you, Dan Patrick and Rich Eisen.
Okay, they get it.
Hey.
Find them right here at podcast1.com.
That's O-N-E.com.
Yes.
Hey.
Now, back to your welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Here's Chael Sonnen.
All right, we're back. I am joined live in studio by Josh Wilcox. Josh, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Mr. Sonnen?
Hard week, huh?
Yeah.
Lost Roddy Piper.
That sucks.
Yeah, that sucks. And, you know, I'm trying to bring myself down about it because you should be. We've lost a guy. But it's hard. All I want to do is, like, have a celebration of his life. You know what I mean? I'm hearing all these great Piper stories. Yeah. That's why I've got you in here. We're going to talk some Piper stories. But when you hear Piper stories, they end up making me feel good.
Yeah, well, you look at this, and you're supposed to feel sorrow and in mourning. And I think we all kind of did that over the weekend, or people that got to know him, or wrestling fans, and especially his family still in mourning. But I think we need to celebrate what Roddy Piper brought to everyone out there in terms of. He's one of the first guys, and I said this earlier today, there is no WrestleMania or Hulkamania without Roddy Piper.
It's true. Some people don't realize that.
You have to. You know this better than anybody. Right. You have to have a villain to make a hero.
Yep.
And everybody jumps on that hero's bandwagon, but later on, that villain becomes a hero. So that's why Roddy Piper, I think it was WrestleMania 3, he went face straight on then because no one could hate Roddy Piper. And that was the most amazing thing about him. And you look at this, and he died at, 61 years old? He lived 350 years in 61.
You sent me that text message.
Yes.
When we were talking about him dying, you go, the guy lived 300 years. And I'm like, you know what? Yes, he had an amazing. And that's what turned me from mourning and being sad and, oh, man, reaching out to Colt and telling him I'm sorry, to it just turned me. I'm going, let's just celebrate this guy, man. This guy did it right.
Well, I was just watching. I was in mourning watching the Greg the Hammer Valentine Starrcade chain match with it wrapped around their neck. And if you go back and watch the psychology and just how they did it, it's simply, in 1983, it blows you away in terms of psychology and how a match is put together.
Sure.
And some of those promos, that's what he was known for, especially, you know, us growing up around here. And we've seen the old footage of him and Buddy Rose. And those promos are just phenomenal because that was raw. That was uncut. That was... So here's a mic, go for it. And whatever came off his head, he would throw out there. And he became this kind of icon that was, while a villain, he was on our cartoons in the morning.
Sure.
On Saturday mornings. And he's this guy, then he's, you know, chewing bubble gum and kicking ass.
Yeah.
And he's in the movies. So all those things, he's one of those guys that, even my folks who not big wrestling fans, oh, you know, Roddy Piper, yeah, we know who he is. He transcended just not sports entertainment, but into entertainment, period.
Yeah. Everybody knows who the Hot Rod is. He's got the ugliest T-shirt that Vince McMahon has ever been, all the way down to the way he goes around the arm. More people have bought that damn Hot Rod shirt for the last 3 decades, and don't think they're not having to print extras right now.
What I think all the boys had the black ones on last night with everybody standing up there. And next week at SmackDown, don't think there's going to be a Hot Rod shirts all around that building.
I'll be wearing one.
Oh, yeah. I got mine autographed that I still have, that he's the autograph for me in 2001 when I did his show at Mack Court. So here I am playing in the XFL, right? Down in L.A. for Vince McMahon, that league, getting paid. You know, we got our money, so I know USFL guys didn't, so sure. XFL got it. I get a phone call from Roddy Piper. I get a phone message. Hey, Josh, this is Roddy Piper. We're having a show at Mack Court, which is the University of Oregon, where Mr. Son and I went to college.
Of course.
It's they don't even use it anymore. But hey, we're going to have this wrestling match, and Mr. Perfect's coming in. We're going to do all these things, and we want you to be in it. Okay, wait, it's at Mack Court. You're calling me to be in it. I do it for free. Yeah, we're going to pay you. I mean, you get that phone call from a guy like that, and I'm sitting there, and my father's in the NFL Hall of Fame. I've been around a bunch of football guys. But to get a call from Roddy Piper asking you to be on a show, yeah, that's a top five moment.
You don't forget that.
No, it's a top five moment.
Didn't Kafori promote that, though? Was that Ivan and Jeff?
Yeah, Ivan and Jeff helped out with that, and they were the first ones that got me back in back into it. But, you know, they developed a relationship with Roddy, and then here Roddy a couple years ago had the Portland Uncut show.
Right.
And he called me up, and, you know, they asked me, said, hey, do you want to be on commentating with Joe V? Absolutely. And I actually got to call a match with Don Koss. And then here I am sitting in a production meeting with Roddy Piper, figuring out, okay, how this story wants to go. I'm sitting here, that's like bizarre. And then he comes over the house for a couple hours one day. Me and Roddy Piper watching wrestling, talking wrestling.
Wow. How cool is that?
Those are those moments that we can sit here and talk about, and you know what it's like when you're around guys. Like, it just, you can't describe it.
Sure.
But you can explain it, but you can't describe it.
Yeah. Whenever you meet a superstar like that, and then he turns out to be just a regular guy.
Oh.
Right,
man.
And you hear those stories, but nobody really knows what you mean unless it happens to you. No, he's just a regular guy. And for us Portland guys, it didn't matter if he was at WrestleMania. If he was back in town, he'd pop over to Don Owens Promotions and do a house show.
Oh, yeah.
No problem. Kevin Keeney, our friend.
Yep.
So Kevin's the announcer down at the Roseland for the FCFF. He finds out through Colt and just says, hey, you guys want to come down? They came down. So he puts him right on the spot. He's like, would you do an interview? Would you come? Like, it was nothing. Roddy Piper got in the ring right down at the road. Yeah, the guy's that's headlining a WrestleMania, mm-hmm. pops in the ring just because someone asked him to. And I mean, he, without saying a word, as soon as he got into that cage, oh my God, that place came unglued. Then he said very few words. He didn't say a whole lot, but he understood the psychology. He knew how to look at the crowd. He knew when to drop them. You know, I'm watching him from that standpoint, watching every facial expression he made, when he turns to this side of the crowd. The guy was a genius. And for us, he was just a regular dude.
Oh, he was an absolute regular dude, but he was such a genius at all those things. In the, you know, the story goes that he used to have a notebook. And filled with all kinds of sayings and all those things. So whenever he have a thought, he'd write it down. And he had this big notebook. And that's where he came up with the chew bubble gum and kick ass mm-hmm. line. And all those lines that he came up with.
And he's all out of bubble gum.
And all those are in the change the question. He wrote all those down. He was always thinking ahead. And the interesting thing is that if you watch his old stuff back with like Flair and Mid-Atlantic and stuff. And you know, he was fighting Flair. I think he had the U.S. title, those type of things. And those... You know, watching back on old WWE Network stuff or back on YouTube, just watching him, he did it then. And he was such a master of it in the 70s that once he got to the 80s and 90s, it was just so easy for him to do. And you said it, he can snap into Rowdy Roddy Piper or Mr. Toombs. And when you meet Mr. Toombs, holy smokes, what a great man to kids, what a great man to his family. But when you meet Rowdy Roddy Piper, watch out, man, because that guy's hell-bent for leather.
Sure. He knows how to get over.
Oh, man. He was a master at that.
Now, Josh, I got to tell you something. Unless you've been living under a rock, you probably already heard me tell you about my favorite sponsor, Onnit. O-N-N-I-T. It's a based health and wellness company. They focus on inspiring peak performance through a combination of unique products, actual information, and strategies from leading professionals, athletes, and medical practitioners. Onnit has focused on creating earth-grown, nutrient-based supplements and foods, as well as unconventional fitness equipment, all based upon the latest in science and research. If you go to onnit.com/chale, onnit.com/chael, you get 10% off of all of their products right now. Three that I use. First off, Alpha Brain. It's a complete and balanced nootropic. It's designed to enhance focus, mental drive, and memory. Also, the Onnit Warrior Bar. This is Adam Carolla's favorite. It's delicious. It's buffalo meat. It's 14 grams of protein. There's no MSG, no soy, no lactose, no nitrates, and it's gluten-free. And also consider MCT oils, medium chain triglycerides. And Josh, I stumble over that every single week. Medium chain triglycerides. These are healthy fats. They're found naturally in coconut oil, unlike other MCT oil. Onnit MCT oil is derived from 100% pure coconut oil. These supplements are on the cutting edge of sports nutrition. I want to share them with you. That's why I'm telling you about it, Josh, and the audience. You can all get 10% off of these products right now by going to onnit.com/chael. onnit.com/chael. It's simple. Head on over to Onnit. Start strengthening your mind and body today. Now, back to us.
I trip over the all the time, so don't worry about it, man.
These reads are actually a little bit difficult. And you know where I got this whole do a read right in the middle of a spot? Fans the show's free, but I still get the jerk that's mad that I do an advertiser during the thing. It's like, hey, you do realize I could charge you to listen to the show, or I could just give you the show and charge the sponsor. Yeah. Adam Carolla, I went out and did his show, and he inspired me. I was influenced through Adam. He's got the biggest podcast, just period, the biggest podcast. And doesn't matter genre. He's number one. But this is how he does his reads. He never takes a break. And I didn't get it. Partway through the show, he was doing like something for Sherry's Berries, and I'm jumping. I go, oh, wait, I'm supposed to shut. He's doing a commercial right now. And I didn't get it. And he goes, yeah. He goes, I don't want to tell my audience I'll be back. My audience sits down, they listen to the show, and I roll through it. Keep them engaged. Yep. And I thought, well, that makes sense. And as a listener now, I don't feel like I'm being advertised. I feel like it's part of the discussion. So yeah, I kind of stole the idea. Yeah. Tell me what's up.
Hey, there's no gimmick infringement anywhere.
I don't think there should
be. No, there shouldn't be.
Now, speaking of products, you're now in the tequila business.
I certainly am,
now,
man.
What does that mean? You sent me a text. You said, you're making tequila?
Well, yes.
Boss Hogg? Like you're doing moonshine?
No, not out of Junction City. I work for a company called Azunia Tequila.
All right.
It is based down near Tequila, Mexico. We have four brands up here in America right now, or the North American market. We have two that are certified USDA organic. We have a Blanco, a Reposado, which are certified USDA organic. We can do that because we own the farm. We do it all down there.
Right.
No pesticides. It's our own water. Then we have an Añejo, which is phenomenal. And then we have a Black, which, whoo! That's the $100 bottle one, man.
Really?
That's
the
one,
strong stuff?
That's the one that we'll be sampling later on, buddy.
So, if one of my viewers has to drive later, they should try some of that to calm their nerves. Like to calm their nerves a little bit.
Driving a tractor, maybe. But, it's available. It's available in all, I think, 48 states. It's huge right now in Southern California.
Wait a minute. It's actually banned in two states?
Well, I think there's a couple we haven't got in there.
You need to add that to the marketing. You're telling me there's a tequila that two states are keeping out?
I think
should be advertised.
I actually believe, and I'm not sure that Utah is one because it's, you know, Utah rules, but I'm not certain on that. But we have some awesome owners. Peter Jacobson, a professional golfer, is an investor. Bill Walton's an investor.
Nice.
It's blowing up in Southern California. AzuniaTequila.com. Go check it out. I mean, it's one of the cool. I've had a lot of cool jobs. We've go way back. I've had a lot of cool jobs, but this one in the morning gets me up. I can use all my relationships with friends, see all my sports buddies, and I get paid to get up and try to make people drink awesome tequila.
Very cool. And Josh, I promise you, I'll check that website out as soon as I figure out how to spell Azunia. So, do you want to tell me, or do you want me to just
A Z U I N A
A Z U N I A
Azunia? I think I spelled it right. Let's see.
I'm not positive how to spell tequila for that.
Oh,
so
boy.
You've got a couple of trick words in there for me.
Well, I know.
And I'm a smart guy, and I don't know how to spell Azunia.
A-Z-U-N-I-A tequila.
All right.
Did I say it wrong the last time?
No, you said, first time I've heard of it. I mean, what do I know?
A-Z-U-N-I-A tequila.
Oh, there it is. Jacob's brought it up.
Yeah, there we go.
It's even a beautiful bottle.
Yeah, we have a beautiful bottle.
This is Mark Cuban's tequila. I saw Mark Cuban was drinking this on one
Cuban
of his shows.
Was?
Yeah, Cuban was drinking. He even worked some spot into Entourage, that show where he was doing something like this, but I recognize it now.
Well, you know, I mean, it
that's
should be on
company.
Entourage. Look at that black. The black, man, that's the one we want.
That's the one that's banned in a couple of states.
No, I think because some states don't want to do business with me,
gotcha.
To be honest.
The UFC, to remind you, was only legal in two states. It was banned in 48, but at that time, they would use that, and it worked for me. That would add intrigue with me. Banned in 48 states. I go, well, then now I have to watch
it. See, but I'm going to throw a way back machine on you, because we watched, I think, UFC like two or three at my house in college. It was like a pay-per-view, and I think it was the round robin tournament with Don Fry. Was that right? It was like two or three, because that's when you were wrestling.
Don came in around six or seven, but yes, there was still tournament format.
Henderson and Severn, maybe.
Okay.
Or Shamrock was in one of them or something. But
okay.
I know that you came over with, you know, Roberts and the guys. We'd watch UFC fights, because those only guys that liked to watch it were a couple of us and you guys.
Sure.
Nobody knew what it was back then.
Oh,
it was awesome, though.
So, yeah, see, you on one hand, yes, that dates us, but on the other hand, man, those are good memories. That's back when the world was done right.
Oh, I know.
And
we liked wrestling, too, so it was something that transformed right back over to it.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, hey, what is this stuff? And as a wrestler, me as a pro wrestler, or, you know, huge fan, both pro wrestling fans, but you as a collegiate wrestler, this kind of was all in our wheelhouse.
For sure.
Yeah, it was great.
Now, you mentioned the XFL briefly. Why did the XFL go under? Did they not have the media support behind it? Did Vince not understand football enough? What happened
there? I actually think what happened is we got started so late. In terms of, it was a TV show is what it was. It wasn't really a league. It wasn't driven off revenue off ticket sales. It was driven off TV and numbers, which everything is today. So Vince partnered up with NBC, had all these deals ready to go, and UPN partnered up. We pop good ratings beginning. Ratings fade away. NBC pulls their part of the money, but Vince still has it. His money up, but they need to find a TV outlet for it. Because it wasn't, we played in LA Coliseum, we're drawing 30,000 people. That's not going to pay your rent check.
Sure.
But the media part of it with Vince, there is, and they'll say no, but there is a bias towards, especially from sports media side, towards what Vince McMahon is and what he became and what he does. And the misunderstandings or them not understanding it's how he promotes and it's a business, I think killed some of that. They didn't like it. He came in a little bit brash trying to do the, you know, hey, we're going to have the guys with cheerleaders and the hot tub type of thing.
Right.
And that kind of made people look at it as a gimmick when we were all football players that got put on a field. We had too many camps and we had 3 weeks of practice, and you want to see a product starting in February or January that, ooh, you know, it's not going to be like the NFL. You can't expect it to be, but if anybody sees it and it's been promoted, well, it's got to be this good. End of the year, teams were better because we'd been together, and mm-hmm. and teams were starting to flow, but you got to give the guy credit because he had a lot of balls to put up his own money. I haven't seen anybody else do that and go out there and blast it.
Sure.
But it's the TV ratings. TV ratings are what killed it. And if you don't have TV ratings, no advertiser is going to follow. And that was his business model. And he also had ECW, WCW at the same time, so I'm sure there was a lot on his plate.
Right.
The very first game we played in San Francisco, we get done, and I walk out, and there I see Michael PSAs and Brother Love, Bruce Pritchard, and I'm like, what are you guys doing here? Because I'd met him maybe once before. They knew, you know, that I'd want to do wrestling. Oh, yeah, well, Vince has got us working these games, too. I'm like, boy, this one's going to be a long. If Michael P.S. Hayes is a producer for the XFL,
right.
This might not, you know, kind of be in the same world here.
Yeah. I hear you on that. He probably should have brought experts in that specific field.
Yeah.
Now, when you bring up Brother Love, mm-hmm. I just heard this. I started a rumor here, but tell me if this is true. I read that he was just fired from the company because he had, like, pulled a gun on somebody backstage, something along these lines. Does any of this
I've never heard that
ring
one.
A bell with
no.
you? I don't have that on good authority, and I am definitely not reporting that. But, well, that's not true. Actually, I did get it on pretty good authority, but I haven't
the
heard
internet.
It anywhere else either. Yeah, the internet, exactly. I did get it from a trusted source. So it's something like that, though. I'm not quite connecting the dots. There's something to do with him and something to do with a gun. But I heard that he is now out, and he's been there for 30 years.
Well, I thought he's been out for a while. Wait, Bruce Pritchard, Brother Love? He's been out for a while.
Has he been out a while?
Yeah, because he was at TNA a couple years ago when I was down there. Seeing some guys.
And that might be who then he got released from. Whatever it was, he's out of the business right now.
Yeah, I think he's out of the business.
Okay.
I think he was at TNA last, or I don't know how many guys before they've been through on that creative thing down there. I don't even know if they're going to still have a company.
Yeah, what's
honest.
Going on with TNA? It sounds like they're going to close up.
I don't know, man. They put a lot of money into it.
And, yeah,
you
too
know,
much,
I feel bad because there's some good guys down there. I met some of the guys. They have some good talent. But yeah, again, we go back to television. If you don't have ratings and
right.
you can't get people drawn in there and you can't get them to buy in, how many shows last?
You know, people were complaining about that when they were over at Spike, but they were doing a 1.1 every single show. It's like, man, that's a huge number. A 1.1, that's a pretty inexpensive show to put on. What seems to be the problem here?
I think they had that set up, and then I think they went on the road, and then their production costs go up, where if they were doing the thing down in Orlando, that's perfect for them. But, you know, how do you want to – do you want to stay as little old comfortable TNA, or do you want to be big? And I think there was a kind of point in time where they're trying to figure out what they want to do. Now Ring of Honor comes in, gets a TV deal. You're seeing all these kind of TV deals popping up with the El Rey Network. You got something blowing up. All these type of things. The sport now or professional wrestling – more the New Japan on Axis, all these things coming up. Now, there's more kind of with just cable and not satellite, there's more wrestling shows than there ever has been.
Right.
It's amazing if you really think about it.
Yeah, there are. And they say on TNA, and nobody knows what their numbers are, but they say to sustain, they could do it even outside of the American market right now. They claim that they have deals overseas that are big enough to sustain them. Now, I'm hearing some of the guys' checks have been rubberized in the back, and they haven't been paid for a couple of weeks. But
I think that's happened like consistently over the last couple of years, is that there's been, you know, it's kind of, hey, we got to figure out here, and all right, you're going to get paid double or, you know, one of those things, and I'm not... It's never worked before in wrestling, so I don't know how that ever carries on.
Did you get a chance to see Global Force Wrestling? That's the Jeff Jarrett show. Did you get a chance to see any of that? Only a couple of things slipped out online. It hasn't been produced yet, but you didn't get to see any of it?
I purposely not looked for anything because I just want to see it. I get tired of every once in a while you go on there and everything's spoiled. I pull back so I can just watch it and enjoy it.
Right. It was... outside of a Vince McMahon production, it's the next best show I've ever been to. And I've been to a lot of shows, and I'm pretty critical of them. But, you know, Jeff Jarrett's a smart cookie. There's no way around that. Second-generation guy. He knows what he's doing. But he plays it very close to the vest. You know, I'm not on the inside. I'm not one of the boys yet. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he knows what level he can trust me to kayfabe what needs held as an industry secret and just be a fan or an analyst on the other side. So, but I can feel that when I deal with him. You know, I get hesitant to ask him questions because I can tell he doesn't really like to say. But when that show finally came off, he was very humble about it leading up. But when it went, I mean, all the way down to the sound and lights, I mean, he broke the bank on production on this. He brought in a lot of good talent, but everybody band together. And by the end of the night, I'm sitting back going, this was an amazing event. And I wasn't expecting an amazing event. I was expecting a good event.
Well, then that I think what he did such a good job of is building a roster of guys that have some street credibility and some names and some other that, you know, unless you're a hardcore wrestling fan, you're really going to know. So some other guys, and then the talent they brought in. And it's not the same, but I equate it going way back to when we grew up and you know, WWF brought in everybody from all these different regions. Not the same, but similar. He's bringing guys in from all over and all different types of people because that's what everybody now is. The big complaint is, well, everybody's cookie cutter. There's only a couple different sizes. Now Jeff Jarrett's gone out. I'm going to bring everybody from all over and kind of create that melting pot that everybody has been used to, because you used to have a Japanese wrestler, then you'd have a German wrestler, then you'd have the midgets, then you'd have a giant, then you'd have a musclehead, then you'd have a fat guy, then you'd have a truck driver, then you'd have all these other type of guys. You blend that all together, and that's kind of what the genesis of quote-unquote pro wrestling is to a lot of people.
Right. No, I think that's right. I think that's really right. You know, Jarrett is another one where it's everything that you first laid this out with. If you're going to be in business of some kind of show business, you have to have the TV deals and you have to have the sponsorships. And he's a little out of order here. So now he's putting skin in the game. He's throwing the shows, which are later going to be cut and edited and served as a pilot to then get on something. And he's believing in himself and he's investing big. And I don't know who's backing him. I don't think this is just family money. There's rumors of Toby Keith.
I don't know. His name's always popped up as a guy that, you know, has had interest in wrestling and tight with those guys. And yeah, who knows? I think it's great for everybody to get out there and a chance for the boys to get out and get working.
Right.
And what I really like, to be honest, is I'm going to put over NXT because I think that's a great product.
Love it.
I think they're
great
doing
product.
A great job. A guy that I know really well, Adam Pearce, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, old NWA champ, is now a coach down there. Couldn't think of a better guy to be a coach. I actually got to wrestle him in front of Jim Ross. That helped me get signed for WWE back in the day. And what they're doing and seeing that the special, I mean, just think if they would have had that type of thing. That, I mean, it's almost like, you know, a big football complex, and all you do is go down there and just train.
Right.
And every single gimmick you could think of, from the, you know, teaching you how to walk out on stage to teaching you, you know, to where to look in the hard camera. Because I was in OVW. We were in a little shack, or not a shack, but we were in this, like, industrial area with, you know, a couple in things where, you know, we're bringing the ring in and out. And I was only there a couple months, but, you know, Brock Lesnar and Ron Waterman and John Cena and Batista and Orton, all these guys. Brian Keck, a next wrestler.
Yeah.
And all these guys.
No neck Keck.
But
no
all,
gimmick.
No gimmick. He had a flying headbutt, I think. Heidenreich was there, but all in this is really small type of thing, so they can make the stars. But these guys down in NXT have every opportunity to get something and go after it. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's exciting. That's exciting. Ring of Honor is another one.
Man. They got to slow down, though. That's too much. They go 100 miles an hour. You got to allow them to breathe.
Right.
Just like when we're talking about Roddy doing a promo, allow the crowd to absorb it.
Sure.
And then go after him.
Sure. Jake the Snake Roberts was one. He was the first one to ever cut a promo in low tone. He's the first wrestler to ever come out inside a crowd.
And then he'd speed up.
Very softly. And he said his thinking behind that was the softer, the quieter I talk, the more they have to listen. I don't know that that works in everything, but it worked for him.
Yeah.
And it's psychology. There's a lot to it. Well, we're out of time. You got anything else you want to add?
Well, I do quickly have to mention, thanks for coming to one of my wrestling matches back in
Loved
the day.
Loved it.
When the fan jumped in the ring.
That was a separate match. Now, that one was in Eugene.
That's right.
The first one I came up to was up in Portland.
Oh, Bruiser Brian Cox,
yes.
Right?
Yes. God rest his soul.
And good dude.
Yes. And Roberts and I jumped in the car. We came up early because we knew it would be sold out. It was jam-packed.
It was
fun,
man.
We remember when you finally came through the curtain and they made us wait. Yeah. But it was unbelievable. And yes, when that... That fan stormed the ring. I don't know if you know this. I think I told you this years later, but that fan that stormed the ring in the match you're talking about in Eugene.
At the fairgrounds.
At the
pavilion.
He went around that venue that night and asked everybody, hey, if somebody interferes with Wilcox's match, I'm getting involved. Will you help me? Will you help me? He asked everybody. I ran into him in the bathroom, and I told him, yeah. But I didn't mean it. I thought he was working.
Yeah,
I thought this
Westland
was part
gangster.
Of the show. Yeah. So it actually happens. Someone interfered in your match. He went and got involved. And as they're carrying him out, he's walking past every person going, you said you'd help me. And he finally came to me because you said me help. He's like, yeah, but I didn't know we were serious.
He had like sweats on, shorts over sweats, as Robert, a friend of ours, called it the Terry Funk starter kit.
Yeah.
And this like bad flannel like Mick Foley would wear. And he got punted in the side of the head by Lou Andrews so hard. Oh, I think he still has a concussion.
And that's what happens, man, when you interfere with that stuff. Because what you can't give a chance a guy to get over. That ruins everything.
No,
you know,
man. He was ruining my homecoming,
that's
man.
That's exactly right.
We did win the belt, so.
Absolutely. Hey, and then wore it to, not joggers, it was
Wild
the one
Duck.
On campus. The Wild Duck.
Yeah,
that
man,
night,
I got a free dinner out of the thing.
Very cool.
Hey, thanks for letting me come on, though, man. I appreciate it.
I'm pumped that you're here. Would not miss it. And for the rest of you, we've gone a little bit too long. Well, Josh and I started rambling there. Have you guys listened to me? Have you finally gone and downloaded the TrueCar app? How many free products can I tell you guys about? Free products. There's no catch in this. Download the free car app. Next time you need to make a big purchase, like, say, buying a car, you go to the app, you put everything on the car you want. Build your dream car. All the way down to how many miles you want it, what color you want it. You name it, you put it on there, and it will tell you what other people have paid for that exact same car. You lock in your savings. You then take that to a certified TrueCar app dealer. The dealer will honor that price. There's no haggling. There's no negotiating. Generally, you're going to save about $3,000 off of the MSRP. We like to call it transparency in the car business. And you don't have to waste a day, usually a Saturday, down at a car dealership. You can go watch football or wrestling or listening to this great podcast where I keep giving you guys free stuff. Save time, save money, never overpay. Download the TrueCar app today. In the meanwhile, go to badguyinc.com. Check out all of the merchandise. All the merchandise that I keep telling you guys about. Number one website for the number one podcast. I'm Chael Sonnen. I've had it with all of you. Until next week. Remember who you are, what you stand for, and don't let it drag you down.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.